to pick back up in chapter 17. And we had just gotten started there. So we're going to actually go ahead and just jump back in again, really at verse 1. And so in this chapter, we're going to be introduced to the great prostitute. And we're going to learn some things from the angel who's going to share with John what's going on in this chapter, and actually is going to explain some things for us. And I think this is really a helpful chapter as you start to think about the book of Revelation and trying to understand it. This helps clear up some things. And so as we get to the end of it, hopefully that will bring some more understanding as far as Rome being the country or the nation that we've been talking about bringing the punishment unto God's people. And so we start out in verse 1, and it says, "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls," and remind me, what were the seven bowls? What had happened? What did we just finish talking about? What were the seven bowls? Not specifically what each one were, but what was going on with the seven bowls? Judgment, yeah. And how was it a partial judgment? How was it described? God's what wrath? Was it his half wrath? His complete, his full wrath. Yeah, so God is bringing his full judgment upon Rome. And so those angels were the ones that were helping issue that judgment. And so one of those angels came and spoke with me. So who would the me be? Spoke with John, the author, saying, "Come here, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters." And we just got into this, and we said, why would he use the term great prostitute? What's the thought there? Satan, okay, maybe, yeah.
Another relationship.
A relationship, yeah. What was the relationship between Rome and God, right? There wasn't one, right? They were unfaithful. And so the reference here is to a great prostitute. And the great part of this is really emphasizing the fact that, you know, how horrible was Rome? I mean, they were to the extreme. Right? They were the great prostitute. There were prostitutes, and then there was this one who was greater than all others. And so when we think about the sins of Rome, they were greater than all others. And we'll kind of cover some of that. And the picture that's being painted here, this word picture, says that this great prostitute who was sitting on many waters, and we kind of cheated and looked ahead. And what did we determine the many waters were? Do you remember what verse that was?
Many nations, many other nations.
Okay, yeah, it was many nations, yeah. So look at verse 15, just as a reminder. And he said to me, this is the angel, "The waters which you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples and multitudes and nations and language." Okay, now stop reading. We don't want to go too far. We don't want to get crazy here. So this prostitute, she's sitting on many nations, many people, right? And so The thing here is the leadership of Rome, the influence of Rome is significant. It's great. It's over many people. And so thus that coincides with her being called this great prostitute because she has so much influence. And when we go into verse 2, it says, the great prostitute who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of sexual immorality. And so when we think about that, what's going on there? What's the comparison?
They worshiped other gods besides the God.
Okay, they worshiped other gods besides the God. But what about the kings of the earth? So this isn't necessarily just Rome, right? With whom the kings of the earth. What were other nations doing?
They were influencing the same people, right?
Yeah, they were committing, you know, acts of sexual immorality, right? They were involved with Rome, right? Here, Rome was portrayed as this prostitute, and these other nations are being portrayed as having inappropriate relations with, you know, Rome. What does that mean? It means that these other nations were involved with Rome in all of her sins, with all of the things that she was doing against God. These nations are heavily involved with her, and thus also guilty of sexual immorality or the abandonment of the relationship with God, right? And so this is again why she's called the great prostitute, because other nations pursued her, followed her, bought into what she was teaching as a nation, all of that leading away from God. Chris, do you have a comment?
When you think about it in terms of prostitute or those inappropriate relationships, I feel as if other nations were being seduced by what we would say, the glitter of sin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, there's a verse we're going to hit on that's going to, I think, will go along with your comment very well. So remember that, and we'll come back to that. But I think you're spot on. This enticement that Rome had with its power, its great wealth, you know, everybody wanted to rub elbows with Rome, right? So yeah, we'll come back. I think there's a verse that we're going to talk about that I think parallels that exactly. And so Rome is being portrayed as this great prostitute. And then John says in verse 3, says, and he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And so what's John telling us here? What's going on? Is he physically getting carried away into a wilderness, or is this still part of this dream or this vision he's having? Yeah, I think he's still saying, you know, he's still having this vision. God is still bringing these images, telling this story to him. And so he's kind of painted this picture of, he's observing this situation, and now he's sharing with us, okay, this angel comes. And the angel takes him somewhere else. He's getting ready to see something different, right? And so says that he's carried away in the spirit into the wilderness. And he says, I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And we kind of got to this point, I think, on Sunday. Does that beast sound familiar? Do you remember us talking about a beast that kind of sounded like that? Yeah, same as chapter 13, verse 1. So if we go back there, just as a quick reminder, in chapter 13, verse 1, it says, then I saw a beast, and this is John, then I saw a beast coming out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horn were 10 crowns, on his head were blasphemous names. And so just a reminder that's, I think we're talking the same beast here that John is referencing again. And so he goes into the wilderness and he sees this woman sitting on the scarlet beast. And he says, the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, holding in her hand a gold cup. And then we're going to stop right there. Chris, what was your comment that Rome was looking like to the other nations?
That they were being seduced by the glitter of sin.
The glitter of sin. So if you think about this woman and the description of her, you know, sounds pretty impressive, doesn't it? Right? Woman, she's, you know, clothed in purple and scarlet. What did we say?
Royalty
and wealth, right? So this woman, you know, she represents wealth and royalty, adorned with gold. Same thing, right? Wealth, precious stones and pearls. And she's holding in her hand a golden cup. And if we just stop there, would that not be someone you'd be impressed with? Right? You'd be drawn to them, right? Money, wealth, power, right? Think about it today. What are people drawn to? Money, wealth, power, right? And so this woman is being portrayed as all of this, but then he goes a little further in telling us what we learn about this woman. In her gold cup is what? The last part of verse 4. Abominations and unclean things of her sexual immorality. So in appearance, what's he saying about Rome? What did Rome appear like? Say it again.
So they were being enticed by sin.
Yeah, they're enticed, right? There's this money, this power, this glory, wealth, all of these things Rome portrayed, but yet internal to the cup, she's full of abominations, right? Right, the inside is an abomination to God. And so he's painting this picture for us that Rome, this great prostitute, has drawn all these other countries to her with these you know, promises of wealth and power and glory. And yet on the inside, she's still ugly and full of sin. And she is just as guilty, you know, of sexual morality as anyone else. Sonny?
I think what we need to understand is there's nothing wrong with being wealthy. And there's nothing wrong with being, you know, having the riches of this world.
Or being beautiful, right?
Yeah, but on the other hand, you have to be faithful to God.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the Bible, God has used those that are very, very wealthy, those that are poor, and you fill with all kinds of stories.
Yeah.
And so no matter what position you find yourself, the most important thing is for you to use that position for the glory of God.
Right.
A good example is Job. Job was one of the most wealthiest men during his period of time.
Yeah.
Abraham was very, very wealthy too. And so, but God was able to use them to do his will.
Yeah. And what you see here is that was not what Rome was about. Rome was about self-serving, right?
Yes.
They were about growing their power, wanting to rule the world to be the most dominant nation there was. And so we see that in verse 4. In verse 5, we see, and on her head, so this is again the woman who's sitting on the beast, on her forehead a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. Now, this isn't the first time we've heard about Babylon, right? The reference to Babylon. When was this book of Revelation likely written? 96 AD. Babylon had been destroyed long time ago, right? So the reference here is pulling back imagery of Babylon being destroyed. And as we went through some of the other chapters, we've made those links with how this message that's being sent to these churches in Asia Minor, you know, some of this is going to be easy for them to understand because they're going to understand the context. But if, you know, someone from Rome picked it up and was going to read it, they're probably not going to pick up on the fact that of what's being said here. And so again, upon her is written Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes. And again, we understand what the reference there is, the mother of prostitutes. She is the one who is leading all of the sin, all of the punishment of God's people at the time. And she's drawing in other nations. Moving over to verse 6. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of saints. So what is he saying now? This woman, she's drunk with the blood of saints. What does that mean?
The quantity of the saints have gone down.
Okay.
We're slain many of God's servants.
Yeah. So she is intoxicated with the blood of the saints. So she has, you know, seen that many of the saints are punished and killed. And it just feeds her to the point of, you know, being drunk. And with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. So not only were the saints being punished, who were the witnesses of Jesus? Yeah, I would say the apostles, those who were going out and teaching the word, right? Those who were helping spread the word. And so Rome is seeing to it that Christians alike and those who are out sharing the message of Jesus were being killed. And he says, when I saw her, I wondered greatly. And so he's been given this vision And he's confused, right? I wondered greatly. He doesn't quite understand it. So he's like, I'm wondering about this vision. So he's injecting a little bit of his own personality here as he tells what's going on. And he's like, I'm wondering about this. And the angel picks up on this, right? And the angel says to me, why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the 10 horns. And so here he is trying to understand this vision. And if you can imagine all the difficult things that he has seen and the beast and the imagery, it's a lot to take in, right? It's been a lot for us to take in. And so he's just like us. He's like, I wonder what's going on. I don't quite get it, right? And so the angel here says, hey, why do you wonder? I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to let you in on what's going on here. I'm going to explain this to you. I'm going to help you understand what this imagery means. And he says in verse 8, he says, the beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to the destruction. So let's pause there. It almost starts out like, how is God and Jesus defined? Who was and is and always will be, right? So it's almost like that, but what does he say about the beast here? Who was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to the destruction. What's he telling us about Rome?
All these kingdoms, whether it's Babylon or Rome, they're going to end, right? There's a kingdom that is going to be victorious and will last for eternity. It's not the, they seem to come, they seem to go. Yeah. Even if they look like that, for history, like, hey, remember this great kingdom in Rome, Syria? Where is it today?
Yeah.
In Rome, at some point, you think this is the worst. This is the one that's going to be here forever, right? And that's what in the world we're living in now. We sit there and say, oh, times are never going to, this is the worst government, best, whatever it is that's going on around you, people. This will turn it as well, right? We all, the situation you're in now is, but it's going to fall.
Yeah.
It's going to come, but there's, so which side, which kingdom are you going to join? You can join that kingdom, the one that's really attractive, you know, things are going on here. Or you can be this one, the stream that was the same, but that's the one that's going to fall.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly what he's saying is, here is this, here's this nation, and you see this beast, right? And they're at one time they're present, then they're not. So the rise and fall of these nations that are persecuting Christians, they're about to come up out of the abyss. So out of this, out of nowhere, they keep coming up, right? One falls and another one comes up. One falls and another one comes up. It's these nations that have been persecuting Christians. And he says, and they're going to go to destruction. And to those, and back in verse 8, and those who live on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that he was and is not and will come. So what do these, first off, who are the people we're talking about? Specifically, it's inhabitants of the earth, but not just all the inhabitants of the earth. Who specifically? I think it's more than Rome. I think it's non-believers. Yeah. I mean, I think Rome falls into that. But I think when he says their names have not been written in the book of life, these are the sinners. These are the ones who are blasphemous against God, right? And I think that's the reference. And so what are these people who are sinners or who are blaspheming God? What are they wondering about when they see the beast? What do they notice is happening to the beast as well? Okay. Yeah. They notice he was. And guess what? And he's not. And will come. So what are they seeing about these nations? They're seeing the same thing, right? These nations rise and fall. And they wonder about this, right? Verse 9, here is the mind which has wisdom. And so here's this message. He's getting ready to say something, and he's like, this is going to take some wisdom. You're going to have to think about this. It's going to require some wisdom. And this is what he says next. The seven heads are seven mountains upon which the woman sits. All right? That, does that sound strange to anybody? So let's talk about it, right? This is going to make a lot of sense, I think, real quick for you. So I'm going to read from a little bit about Rome. And I want you to understand a little bit about her geography. And I think as we read about her geography, this is going to paint a very clear picture that even though we've been talking about Babylon and the beast, I think this is going to bring us really clear vision that what we've been talking about is Rome. So listen to this. Rome was founded on seven hills. Those seven hills are Aventine, Caelian, Capitoline, Esquiline, Palatine, Quirinal, and Viminal. And I'm just going to read this from you. This is just this is actually from a website called socialstudiesforkids.com. So I just want you to know the level that I have gone to figure this out, right? I'm here with the kids reading about this. I wish I'd have paid more attention. But one of the stories of Remus and Romulus, the legendary twins who were said to have founded Rome, was that Remus wanted to build on the Aventine Hill and that Romulus preferred the Palatine Hill. Romulus's victory in this struggle, as the story goes, meant that the city was founded on the Palatine on April 21st, 753 BC. Each of the seven hills had its own culture originally, and the people living on those various hills worked together to drain the marshes in between and later build the Servian walls. Plebeians primarily lived in the Aventine Hill, which was also home to the Temple of Diana and the Temple of Minerva. The Caelian Hill was the preferred location of the wealthy during the Roman Republic. The Capitoline Hill and the Tarpeian Rock, from which Rome at times tossed villains to their deaths below, this hill was also the home to the Temple of Juno Monete. Tallest and largest of the seven hills, the Esquiline Hill, was the setting for several well-known constructions, including the Golden House of Nero, the Temple of Claudius, and the Baths of Trajan. Many an emperor had his palace built on the Palatine Hill, which also housed a number of temples, among them the Temple of the Magna Mater and the Temple of Apollo and Vesta. The northernmost of the seven hills is the Quirinal Hill. The Sabines lived there in ancient times, as did Numa, the second king of Rome. The Viminal Hill was sparsely populated with buildings. Known to have been there was a temple to the Serapis built by Caracalla and the Baths of Diocletian. All right, lots of names, lots of everything. But when you read this, where was Rome built? Rome was built on seven hills, right? And that, this is just from a children's social study book. You can go and I know it's a lot of names and things like that. And I probably pronounce every one of them wrong. But that's not the point. The point is, it's clear even to the world outside of scriptures, Rome was built on seven hills. And so when we look to the scriptures, and we're trying to understand what's going on here, right? The angel is really starting to explain this. And now you understand, I hope, why he said in verse 9, here's the mind which has wisdom. Hey, John, you've got to think about this. But the seven heads, what are the seven heads? They're the seven mountains upon which the woman sits. Who was the woman? Rome. And how does she sit upon seven heads? She sits upon seven mountains. The city was built on seven mountains. And so for those who might question, is this talking about, you know, today or some futuristic thing? I think chapter 17 really paints a very clear picture for us that what we're talking about is Rome and how she treated the Christians and God's judgment upon them. And this verse in particular, along with a children's history book or geography, or any other thing you want to read about Rome and the seven hills, they come together, right? There's no fear of not being able to understand what Revelation is talking about. And so here he makes it very clear that this is what we're talking about. And then in verse 10, he says, and they are seven kings, five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain for a little while. Now, this part, I have to admit to you, this was probably, there are some verses in Revelation that I've tried to figure out and understand. This one, I think, can be a little complicated. It can be one where there are those who have tried to name the kings, right, and tried to put them with the numbers and say this king represents this king and this one represents this one. I saw two examples of where someone had tried to do that, but in the process of doing that, they actually leave out kings because they're trying to pick which king makes the most sense and things like that. So I'm going to tell you, this verse is a little tough for me, but I think the most important thing, if we kind of think about the number seven, what have we said the number seven always represented? It's always represented complete. And so when I looked at this verse, the best explanation that I found is that these are the seven kings, the complete kingship of Rome, right? So we're talking about Rome and its kings in its entirety. I think that it, you know, for me, I could not come up with which were the five, which one is the one that's fallen, which one is the one not to come. I don't know that I can be certain of that. What I could be certain of, though, is that number seven is always meant complete, and the kings, I think, here being referenced are the complete kingship of Rome. So I'll submit that to you, open to suggestions if you found other things in your study. Verse 11, I think, is another one that for me was kind of a challenge. So it goes on, it says, the beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth and is one of the seven, and he goes to the destruction. And so I don't know what to tell you necessarily about this eighth king. I'm not sure who it is. You know, all I can say is that the same fate that the other kings were going to experience, he's going to experience, because in the end of verse 11, it says he goes to destruction. And that's probably as best of an explanation as I can find for you on those two verses. So I'll leave those with you. And again, if you have other studies or other things you come across and would like to share, I'm certain we would love to hear those. So again, this is being explained to John by the angel. And verse 12 says, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. So when I started looking at this, I think this one makes a little more sense. So Rome oversaw lots of provinces and people, and there are those who oversaw those areas for Rome. They weren't necessarily kings themselves, but where did they receive their power from? From Rome. And so I think what it's saying here is that there are those who kind of fall under this umbrella of leadership for Rome, that are these 10 horns. And the fact that they receive authority as kings with the beast, so they've gotten their authority from Rome. And I think the fact that it says 1 hour, how long is 1 hour?
Very short period.
It's a short period of time. And I think as you look at these 10 horns, the message is there are those who have helped Rome pursue her evilness and to kill Christians and dominate. And they got their power from Rome, but it was for a short period of time. It was for a very limited period of time. Yes, Chris.
Just very quick.
Yeah.
I don't want to check, but I just want to ask, is it possible when we talk about 10 and 11, did you also see anything about it referring to as instead of kings, more or less kingdoms? Did you see that too?
Yeah. So I'll read this to you. We'll go back there. So Chris was asking, would the kings represent kingdoms? And so I'll read this to you, and you can just kind of hear what I actually read when I studied this. So John announces that there are seven kings. Some think the 10 horns also represent the seven kings. The early date advocates, so the early date of the authorship of the book of Revelation advocates this as use of proof text for their date. They say that Nero was the sixth king, and John says the sixth one now is. Therefore, the book must have been written during the reign of Nero. The problem here is such a listing of kings is an arbitrary one. To arrive at Nero being the sixth king, as those who believe the book of Revelation was written in the early date would state, for him to be the sixth king, at least three of them must have been left out. And so, again, I think that's why we don't go with the early date and why we have to be careful trying to assign these as individual names. Yet another view is that these seven kings symbolize seven world empires. So to Chris, your point, in order that they are listed, some have said it is old Babylonian kingdom in existence during the time of Abraham, then the Assyrian kingdom, the Neo-Babylon kingdom, the Medo-Persians, the Greece, and the sixth would be Rome, and the other yet to come would be any other that might exist between the fall of Rome and the second coming of Christ. This author says there is some merit to this view. I just lost my place. But we wonder if we should not also consider Egypt as the first of these instead of the old Babylonian kingdom, since it would have been more meaningful to the Jews. And so this is his conclusion. It is probably safest to consider the number seven, as we have all the way through the book, as a representation of the fullness or completeness. In this way, it would apply to the whole of the Roman Empire as represented by the seven kings. And so with each one of those, just going back, with each one of those two potential ways of looking at verse 10 and 11, if you tried to name the kings, it's problematic. If you try to name them as countries, I think there's problems there too. So I would tend to agree with this author that it's talking about the leadership of Rome as a whole. Does that answer your question?
What kind of, sort of like what I was saying, instead of pinpointing and putting on, a king or what king reigned more than the kingdoms, I think that's the safer bet as those who were ruling.
Yeah.
And then in Daniel chapter 7, verse 17, right? So it's like the prophecy before, Revelation, right? Daniel, it says these four great beasts and four kings who shall rise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever and ever. So that's why I thought about kingdom and kings. But I just wanted to know what you thought before
you see something. Like I said, those are the two different, at least, views you might hear people take. And then I think the third one, at least for me, the third one in my head makes sense.
Okay.
So thank you for asking that. Yes.
I kind of half want to say this and half not because I might throw this off. But if I take 10 through 13 kind of as a whole.
Yeah.
And this isn't something I've read. This is just something I'm sitting here reading about. I think there's an element of a timeline there as well. So five have fallen. One's there now. There's going to be some others that fall. But then when it gets down to 12, it's talking about the finality. When the seventh falls, it's going to take these other kingdoms around that have put themselves in Rome. It's going to take them down to destruction. Like if I just forget about what exactly it's talking about, just in general, that seems like a pretty realistic explanation.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, these I think are the tough verses. so good point. So let's look at verse 13, and ultimately, no matter how we look at verses 10 through 12, he clarifies to John what is the purpose of these kings, And it is, they have one purpose, right? Their purpose is they give their power and authority to the beast. And so what are we saying about those who, you know, who served in these roles? They gave their authority and power to the beast. So those who served Rome, that's where they pledged their honor to, and that's where they continued to serve. 7 minutes. Let's move over to verse 14 in chapter 17 of the book of Revelation. And in verse 14, it says, these will wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him are the called and chosen and faithful. So who's going to wage war against who?
The dragon is going to wage war against the Lamb.
Yeah. So the dragon is Satan. He's waging a war against God, the Lamb, Christ, right? And he's saying these will wage a war. So who's he talking about? Who did we just finish talking about?
Rome,
these nations, these people who served Rome, right? They're going to wage this war. They're going to bring evil and try and bring evil against God's good. And this has always been a book that has been written to the churches in Asia Minor to do what for them? What was the purpose of this book?
Encouragement.
Encouragement, right? Encouragement. And so they've been going through this persecution by all of Rome. And this verse right here, what does it tell them? The Lamb will, he will overcome, right? The Lamb will overcome them. Because why? What is the Lamb?
How will the Lamb overcome? Through his blood.
Through his blood. And why does he overcome them? He is what?
Lord of lords.
Lord of lords, King of kings, right? And Rome was very proud, right? Their rulers were very proud. They thought of themselves as lords and kings. And here we see the message is, you know, Christ. Christ is everything. He is Lord of lords and King of kings. There is no one who is greater than him. And so he will overcome. And those who are with him now get the name called and chosen and faithful, right? And we've talked about what it meant to be the chosen or the faithful of God. Those who identified with Christianity and who were striving to follow his words, right? Every one of the letters to the churches in Asia that we read about, we read, he who has an ear, let him what? Hear. And the thought there was, what should he be hearing? The gospel. And then what does he do with it? He obeys it, right? And so here's that message, Sonny.
I was reading, I think, sometime this week. It was so bad. They rounded up Christians, and they will ask you, do you believe in Jesus Christ? And if you say you do, and if you say you do, they put you to death right away. Mm-hmm. And some Christians, they compromise and pay them off and they let them go. So some Christians compromise and some did not. Once you confess, you believe in Jesus Christ, the next thing is they put you to death.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was exactly it, right? You were challenging Rome. If you practice Christianity, if you called the God of heaven your God and didn't identify the Caesar or the King of Rome as God himself, then yeah, you were put to death. We read verse 15, so now we're going to come back. This is where we jumped ahead. And we talked about this prostitute. And the prostitute, we said, represented Rome because all of the nations were endearing themselves to her because of their wealth, the power, the money, all of those things, right? And so here we see he's explaining that. And he said, the waters where you saw the prostitute sit, the waters represent what? The people, the multitudes, and the nations, and the languages. So Rome was bringing down people and multitudes and nations, right? They were bringing them into their blasphemy of God. And so he explains that to John here. In verse 16, he says, in the 10 horns which you saw, and the beast, These will hate the prostitute and will make her desolate and naked and will eat her flesh and will burn her up with fire. Now, the 10 horns we said represented what? Yeah, it represented these other nations, right? These who had power for an hour, right? These who gained power from Rome. But now look what they're doing. What are they doing to Rome? If Rome was represented by the prostitute, what do they do to Rome? They turn against her. So when Rome's destruction, when Rome starts reaping the destruction that was going to befall them for the actions that they were taking against Christians, what are the nations who endeared themselves to her? What are they going to do? Yeah, they're going to leave her desolate, naked. I don't know you, right? They're going to abandon her, and they're going to watch her basically die, right? And so as Rome is being punished, these nations who had endeared themselves to her are not going to have anything to do with her. They're going to turn on her. And it even tells us this in the next verse. For God has put it in their hearts, these nations, right, who were once endeared to Rome, to execute his purpose by having a common purpose and by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. And so these nations basically are going to walk away. They're going to let God do his thing. And verse 18, I think we've got just a few seconds. I think verse 18 clears it up for us. Who was the woman? Who was the prostitute? The woman you saw is what? The great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. Who was reigning over the kings of the earth when this was written to the churches in Asia Minor? It was Rome. And so many people will try and apply this to this futuristic view of the book of Revelation. But if you take it in context, the book itself will tell you this was not about the future. This is actually about addressing the current day situation of the Christians who were being persecuted by Rome. And it's very clear that it's talking about Rome when it calls out the hills that it was built on. And so I think chapter 17 is really kind of where, for me, the book of Revelation gets cleared up a little bit and starts to bring some clarity around, yep, this really is talking about Rome. It really does apply to the Christians at that time, and it's not this futuristic, complicated book. So we will stop there for tonight. We're going to pick up in Revelation chapter 18 on Sunday. Thank you for your comments and your participation, and we'll be dismissed at this time.